This is the RTE Rugby World Cup podcast. Thanks for tuning in. We're just off air after seeing the last two quarterfinals and Faf de Klerk inspired South Africa downing Japan after it had been, 5-3 at halftime. And we saw yesterday we got dry cleaned and England were pretty impressive putting away Australia as well. Michael Glennon and Brent Pope have been kind enough to take a little bit of Sunday afternoon and will join us in a second. But first of all, let's get some post-match camp reaction and we'll hear first from Keith Earls.
Yeah, it's deja vu all over again. I wrote a lot of mistakes ourselves. We shot ourselves in the foot a lot today and New Zealand capitalised on it. It's hard enough playing against them when you're on your A game, never mind probably your D game.
They're one of the most clinical teams in the world and we certainly saw that in the opening 20 minutes, 40 minutes.
Yeah, they had a great start. They're a powerful side and the flow of pressure when they get going is hard to keep under wrap. And Brett Arnsmith, he scored a good try in around the ruck and then I think we had two mistakes for the next two tries and all of a sudden we're chasing the game and making more of it.
What did Joe say at half-time? I mean, you know, considering that the margin was so big, you have to try and once I wipe it up a draw line the sand and move on.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we did. We're moment by moment focused and you know that's all he said. We get out and try and get a score early on and who knows what'll happen then, but it was moment by moment focus.
Keith, can you sum up the emotions you said during the week if you lost this game? You'd be seeing the wife and kids, but obviously very now at this very moment I imagine it's all very raw.
Yeah, it is. You say that, but really, hopefully, didn't want to see him for another 2 weeks. That sounds like probably would have flown him out. But yeah, it's tough. It's tough going. Who knows? It could be my last World Cup.
For you, senior guys, is it particularly tough given the chances you've had over the last number of tournaments?
Yeah, it was. We were so close to, you know, especially the three World Cups I've played in. Just seem to shoot ourselves in the foot in quarterfinals and you know hopefully under Faz now in the next couple of years the lads can build on and hopefully we can get that one step forward.
Right, well I suppose few enough Irish players anyway would be happy with their World Cup adventure, but Niall Scanlon have nothing to complain about. He came on for Rory Best after 63 minutes yesterday and all in all he did his cause as a future international, future part of Farrell's plans no harm and let's take a word with him.
Yeah, look, the performance wasn't where we wanted it to be, no doubt, and it's obviously pretty raw and you know we'll have to reflect on the technical side of it, but you know obviously at the moment it's just very disappointing.
At half-time, I mean, what was Joe trying to say to you to bring everybody together? I mean, the scoreboard certainly wasn't your friend.
No, it wasn't, and you know, we have to be realistic about that, but we still have full belief, you know, that we could score the points that were necessary, but we probably just didn't start the second half in a way that allowed us to kind of kick on, but I thought, in fairness, when I came onto the pitch, that, you know, there was still a huge energy out there, and lads really kicked on till the 80th minute, and, you know, we kept trying to play, but as I say, if you're a small bit off performance-wise against a top-quality outfit like that, it's just very, very tough from, you know, start to finish, so, yeah, just a very tough day at the office.
I know it's a difficult one to digest at this stage, but you do have to give credit to a team who are the world champions and have been for quite a long period of time.
Oh yeah, don't get me wrong, 100%, you know, give them full credit. You know, they didn't allow us play. They were unbelievably clinical. When they had the ball, you know, they were pretty clinical off turnover in the first, you know, 20 minutes. I think they scored two tries off turnover. So yeah, like it nearly goes without saying, you know, all credit to them. They played unbelievably accurately in there. They're a serious outfit and I think they're going to take some beating in this tournament.
It's just a disappointing end from an Irish point of view.
Yeah, it's a very disappointing end, you know, and we've put a lot into this and, you know, there was a grand slam and, you know, things that happened and we were always kind of hoping that this would be the one that we could get over the line with and, you know, it just didn't happen for us and, like I say, it's quite raw now. You know, we'll have to just reflect on the performance itself later, but you know, even to just send Joe and Rory off, you know, we obviously would have liked to have gone the whole way and that was our ambition and it didn't happen and, you know, we are where we are now and it's a tough one to swallow at the moment in the immediate aftermath.
Yeah, so, you know, Niall Scanlon, both lads spoke well. Obviously, Keith Earls is far more stuck into the whole tragic narrative because he's been there. I remember you were in studio. I was the office tea boy at that stage back in 2011 and I was sent down to the Claws pub in Limerick the morning that Wales beat Ireland in the quarterfinal, and I was with Ger Earls, his dad, and
Keith. I know Ger well.
I don't even ever heard of him as a, like an absolute hard as nails legend.
Oh, tough.
But there you go. I mean, time flies. That's his third World Cup. He might get
a
fourth.
You can hear. You know, obviously, you know, for the future, Niall was a bit more upbeat. You could even tell in his, you know, pace and delivery of his interview. For Keith, I think that the, you know, it's the kind of sitting there thinking, you know, I've been involved for three World Cups over a long period of time, had a distinguished career for Ireland. Is this the last opportunity they would have? And when you take away that, when you take away those future goals from rugby players at any age, it's tough to live with, let alone go out in such a disappointment fashion. You can always hold your head up high if you played the All Blacks or whatever and the All Blacks had won by one score or something and you're given everything you got. You can walk away from the game saying it just didn't go our way on this particular time. But it was the manner in the defeat, the manner in the send-off to Rory and Joe Smith, who both deserve better. That is the thing that'll take a while for these players to get over, because they limped out of the World Cup rather than go down fighting, and that's not the Irish way, and it's certainly not this team's way. I mentioned before, I've used the term a lot of times, Darrow, you know, over the TV the last couple of days. The evolvement of the game, the Irish game, was my concern, because I saw, meeting a lot of ex-players, a lot of coaches out in New Zealand last year, they talked about that Irish defensive screen, that Irish, the way that Ireland played, and they said, look, we've got to find a way around that by the next World Cup. You know, that got Steve Hansen thinking about how do you play teams like Ireland or even England, coming up with a plan a year ago or 2 years ago or whatever, which was about putting the world's best out half at that stage, twice World Player of the Year, to fullback, bringing in a rookie guy, Richard Moanga from Crusaders, to play that kind of game. He was criticised heavily. Country people said, look, what are you doing this for? What are you giving Sevu Reese a run when, you know, we've got players that have got 70 or 80 caps? Because he thought that, and he knew that he would have to evolve the game. I don't know that Ireland was stuck in the mud, in a sense, and saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, this has worked for us before. But looking back in retrospect, we had the warning signs, didn't we? You know, the English demolition first game, the Six Nations this year, then the English demolition again in the warm-ups. We were told, look, this was just a hiccup, that the team had something up their sleeve. We didn't see it against Japan. I kept saying, you know, when are you going to start showing this, you know?
And magic
then,
bullet,
yeah. Yeah, and then we were led to believe, look, it's going to come out against New Zealand, and suddenly the whole pattern of the way that Ireland has played is all going to change overnight. And
we
led
ourselves to believe.
Yeah, we did.
Because you want to believe.
Yeah, because you want to believe. And we and this Irish team was still, whether you believe the ranking systems, and they are, you know, it is, it's artificial, yes.
Yeah.
But Ireland still would have said, if you'd have been talking to anybody from New Zealand, England, they would have said, Ireland is a top four team. And if you go into a World Cup as your top four team, you're going to have to say that anything less than a semi-final or final is a disappointment. And I think that's what, you know, years ago, Ireland wouldn't have worried about it so much. They might have said, OK, well, look, you know, it's a dream rather than a reality to get out of the quarterfinal. But for the last three World Cups or so, it's been an actual reality that, yes, that's where they should go. And again, you know, I did the very first game in 1995, Ireland versus the All Blacks in South Africa, and the scoreline was very similar. You know, it was a very special performance by New Zealand, and I don't know whether they'll replicate their performance to the final, even against England. I think there was an element of what the guys talked about, that Ireland, New Zealand just didn't let Ireland play. They just couldn't get into their momentum, couldn't get into their confidence. And then when you're chasing New Zealand, hey, it's a long way back.
Yeah, I know. I mean, look, trying to simplify it is a mug's game in a way, but like just looking at the pace that New Zealand, I mean, the pace that they receive the ball, the pace they carry the ball, the pace they hit the breakdown, the pace they pass, just the speed of their passing, everything seems to
it's
be 20-30% up from Ireland. I mean, Ireland take possession and the world slows down.
Yeah, and that'll be the only criticism, I suppose, of England, in a sense. That'll be the criticism we're all talking. You know, the one word that comes to mind when we talk about England was power. The one thing we talked about in Ireland was defence, you know, these ball carriers. But it wasn't based on a skill set. You know, when we see the Japanese playing with the skill that they had, the number of teams that had problems with the ball even in this World Cup early on, you know, couldn't get the ball. We saw the Japanese having no problems with it. Yes, they can say they play there all the time. New Zealand didn't have a problem with it. These are teams that have worked on their skill sets, and I just think that there were too many mistakes by the Irish team, wasn't there? You know, it wasn't, yes, there was something to do with pressure, but there was too many basic mistakes.
Yeah, but even when they weren't making mistakes, they didn't look like they could tear open a New Zealand defence. Never mind a South African defence. And Michael, funny thing, if you cast back about 18 months, we were looking at the draw and we were going so well, we were thinking, of course, like, we want to avoid New Zealand because they're about our peer, you know, and you never know.
Yeah.
But like, South Africa were regarded as a soft touch then, and look where South Africa relatively have come from in 24 months ago, certainly, and we've gone the other way. So that's just disappointing.
Yeah, it's very understandable.
Finger jabbing, not really. Like.
It's understandable that we did think like that back then because we hammered them in the Aviva, put 40 odd points on them. So at that stage, they looked like a rabble, and they were, but they have significantly improved. And the problem then was that at the start of this year, the manner of the defeats to England, Wales, and Saracens beating Munster and Leinster in that fashion said, okay, the teams that have beaten Ireland look more like what South Africa could bring to the table. And they kind of beat those teams pulling up. They didn't have to reach into anything extra. They just kind of ploughed ahead.
Well, you make a good point, though. Exactly, you make a really good point, and it was the manner of the Saracens' power game that really denied.
Walk us up.
Yeah, that was the way that might. That's going to be the way South Africa, and that's going to be the way England play. By the way,
so that's why we thought that then New Zealand would be a better fit. Even it sounds funny to say that out loud, but I would go back to the England match and Joe Smith's quote about being bullied. So
Six Nations one.
So I was writing at the time to say that the thing about being bullied is that after the black nose is gone, or after the your nose stops bleeding, it's the psychological effect. You avoid the playground where the bully is because he has done something to you psychologically. So at those press conferences, we would ask the questions, try to probe something. Is there something fundamentally wrong, or is there a technical issue that can be cleared up? And the answers came back very similar. This just needs a bit more extra practice. We'll go on the training ground. We'll figure this out. We'll just do more reps. Came after the England match, came after the Wales match, came after the Twickenham match, came after the Japan match. As if they were trying to convince themselves that that's what they had to do. But I kind of sensed that they knew. I was trying to suggest maybe an infusion of new blood. Should Carberry start at 12? Should Simon Zeebo come into the team? And it was, no, this is something that can be sorted out amongst ourselves. We know what we're good at. We can go back to it.
Only I'd agree with you, apart from all of those points were being thrown at Joe before the 2018 Grand Slam and before we beat the
and
All
delivered.
Blacks as well, and he delivered.
That's
so
what I mean.
He earned the right to
exactly. I suppose it's very hard
to
for
do
a
it
coach.
His way.
Exactly. It's very hard. It's very hard to ask a coach to change midstream to what has worked.
Absolutely,
you know, and I get where you're coming from, but it's always easier, you know, from the media and from our points of view to say, you know, why didn't you change it? Why didn't you change it? You know, and it's a stupid thing to say. I mean, if Ireland had gone out and played yesterday the same way and beaten New Zealand, we'd all be sitting here and saying, why did we even throw those questions at Joe? Like,
we'd
you know,
be eating a small amount of humble
pie. Oh, absolutely, be eating humble pie, and that's.
But we'd have also said, we kind of knew that that was going to happen. Like, media know everything. I mean, did you see Eddie Jones yesterday? That Twitter clip was funny going around. Some lad asked him why he dropped Ford. He said, I didn't drop him, mate. He said, he's got a role. And he said, you better get with it. There's 23, it's a 23-man game now. And he says, join us in the modern era. You're writing like you're 30 years out of date. I just love people having a bite back because usually it's just, oh, mate, yeah. And then they sell you nothing. You know, that they really don't value your opinion when you're in the media, but they give you the platitudes. At least Eddie Jones said, go on.
In a way, the expectation and that it was so up and down because suddenly then, as of last week, I got the old acorn, which was, you know, we're exactly where we want to be. You know,
did you hear that,
we're underdogs now, and that's where we come out fighting.
We were supposed to have left those days behind.
Well, that's what I mean. And the number of ex-internationals that came up with us again, you know, that's exactly where we want to be now. You know, the All Blacks are not lying in wait. Hell yes, they were.
Yeah.
You know, I was on the phone every day to New Zealand, and they were saying, we're really nervous about this game, but we think we've come up with a plan over the last year, not the last two or three years, since the last defeat, where we think we can handle Ireland, and this is the way we're going to do it.
Yeah. What gave me some hope was I was listening back to a press conference. So it was again at the start of the year. just before the first England match, Rory Best was talking about competitive games, and he referred to the New Zealand match, and he said at the end of the day it was just a friendly. Now, lots of people don't like to hear the word friendly when it comes to those tests, but once the captain of the winning team on that day came out and called it a friendly, we can be under no doubt that he knew that the New Zealand that was going to turn up later on in the year was a different beast altogether. So that kind of gave me a little bit of hope in that he will be Ireland will be prepared for a different game, not New Zealand at the end of a season, not New Zealand on the jolly in Chicago. It was, but it turns out that for all the talk, they were miles off the pace at the end of the day. I was looking back to another press conference back in 2017. So it was November 2017. I asked Joe Smith about if he would be willing to, inverted commas, sacrifice the Six Nations to build the World Cup.
Yeah,
he says, I would pay the utmost respect to the Six Nations. That's our tournament. That's what we play. It's got a longer history than the World Cup, which is really Johnny come lately. So that was his thing back in 2017. He said that kind of changed with the 2018 victory. That gave them the leeway. But he said, while we might we have more room to experiment in 2019, still, Johnny Sexton started all five games. Rory Best started four of the games. I don't remember. Know if you remember after the France match with the late drop goal, we were playing Italy the week after, and it was an opportunity for another out half, maybe Joey Carberry, to start a Six Nations game.
But look, coaches are going to garnish.
So here we are.
Silverware. All coaches are going to say that. All coaches are going to go after, especially Irish coaches, because Grand Slams are so few and far between. You know, you might look at it a bit different, say, would you sacrifice maybe a Six Nations championship, which they did, in a sense, the last time out. But would you sacrifice, most coaches, the opportunity of winning a Grand Slam to build a team for the supposed opportunity of doing better?
Well, you mightn't get a chance to build the team unless you've something in the locker. I mean, Warren Gatland has bought himself 11 years, rightly, but like it's every few years he'd managed to pull something out of the
hat.
Joe bought himself time through the Leinster victory, bought the Irish job through that, and then bought the Irish job extension.
So that's what I'm saying. So he's not going to he's not going to change things,
Hang on one here. Here's a good one, because I said I'd come back to this. I forgot to on the telly, but like this, everyone was up in a heap about this. This was last Wednesday or something. Kiwi pundits writing off Irish chances. Justin Marshall, we all remember him.
Yeah.
They've got a little laborious in the way they've been attacking. They're predictable. The All Blacks will be up for it, and I think we could actually see put some points on them and win quite comfortably. Justin Marshall is correct. Radio New Zealand's Hamish Bidwell, he's the Corky of New Zealand, allegedly. Yep. He wrote off Ireland as a spoiling team, saying playing much actual rugby eludes them. And Liam Hislop of a New Zealand website, stuff.co.nz, said the men in black look in ominous form and should blow away an Ireland team which was simply overwhelmed by Japan in pool play. But that's us. We were all scratching around, as you said, looking to rewrite the underdog narrative, which we'd all thrown out in the Roy Keane era because we were now modern and
it was patronising to
and it was patronising to ourselves.
Yes, it is, and I've said
we talk some amount of tarmac, lads, really, don't we?
I've said that for years. It is, but still, that's where the wagon circle again. And it was exactly that we were hearing from the media and ex-players and that. You know, we have them where they want it. What did they think about that? New Zealand were just going to sit around and disregard the Irish challenge.
No, we read too much into the friendly wins. I actually, RT Rugby, we put up a poll on the website just an hour ago. So over the next 4 years, would you prefer to see Ireland not win any Six Nations and make a World Cup semi-final, or win two nations and not make the semi-final? Any
good question.
So
I think they're
going to
go
on Twitter. So
for the first one,
59% said not win a Six Nations, and
Popey and myself want to see a semi-final before we pop our clogs.
And me too, because for me, I remember 91. I don't remember 87. But even I was talking to my brother last night, and he'd call me around this time, and this kind of feeling you get as fans, the excitement of possibly doing it. And then we kind of came to the conclusion, I'd love to see them perform and get out of it.
But I think you ask them that now. But you asked them that during the Six Nations Championship. I guarantee you that's a reverse result, because then you're coming up against England every year. You look at this year's upcoming Six Nations. If England go on to win, or Wales go on to win the World Cup, then you know, you're going to have the Irish fans saying, hold on, we're playing England or whatever like that. They're world champions. Yeah, we want to take them down. You've got to have...
And lose all the rest of the games in the championship as long as we beat England.
The unfortunate thing for Joe is that where does that leave Joe's legacy, in a sense? Because, yes, he'll be regarded as the greatest Irish coach, I would
But more successful by trophy.
Most successful by trophy-wise. But... in a sense, it's huge disappointment for him because the kind of the dreams of the ticker tape parade and that down the streets of Dublin.
Yeah, he probably wouldn't be into that, but I understand. Yes.
No, but all
he'd
coach,
have no
he
choice if he'd won it. But a semi-final,
well, he'd
I
be
don't
the,
know.
he'd be made an honorary. Well, give the keys to the city, anything.
Yeah.
So that'll be something that he'll look back on and say, you know, with huge disappointment.
Yeah, it is. And that's the revisionism which kicks in already, which was, Joe's should have gone a year ago and there'll be all
sorts. Well, that's what you're going to get. That's what he's going to get now. That's it.
When I was thinking about that, there was the debate about was he right to announce his departure so far in advance. But then I was thinking, what was the options? Yeah. If he had decided he's moving to New Zealand,
he'd be asked
he has
four
personal
times
issues,
a day otherwise.
And all the players would have been asked. Yeah. And it would have been this weird kind of silence and denial and nobody would know what's going on. And people would be saying, if he just comes out and makes it clear. So I don't
and
think there's much
I
gas in that argument.
The undercurrent to that, also I think that he made a big decision at that stage, in a fairness to Ireland and Irish society, which he loves and that I know, he made a decision there not to put his hat in the ring for the All Blacks. I think that would have been a smack in the nose for Irish. If he'd said, look, I'm leaving Ireland now, you've got me that reputation, I'm now going back to coach the All Blacks. So I think by saying, look, I'm not going back, I'm taking a bit of time out from rugby, it's personal, gave him that latitude. I just don't think as far as the player's been concerned, I played in various teams where the coaches, when you've been successful and the coaches then announced that maybe after a year they're gonna leave. It'd be the same as the Dubs and the GAA or whatever, the coach suddenly says he's gonna leave. There is a bit of a drop in kind of, okay, well, where are we gonna be? You know, where are we gonna be? We can't keep playing each match for that.
I thought the fact that it was going to end.
I don't know what that drop is. Sorry, Michael, but it does seem to happen. I can see why it happens in, say, Premier League soccer, because you know, okay, well, that manager's out the door. I don't need to impress him anymore to guarantee my future here.
There's an element of that, though, in rugby, too. There's an element of those players saying, okay, Joe's selected me for all these matches, even though I might have dropped form a couple of games, he stayed loyal to me. Is that going to be the same under a new coach? You're also going to get younger players saying, well, okay, you know, it should motivate him. This may be my opportunity now.
Yeah, but
it does affect the mindset.
If he was departing at the end of a November series or the end of a Six Nations or middle of the summer, the fact that he was departing at the pinnacle of the sport where guys can't be saying, oh, I'll slack off here. Mm. He did want to get selected for the knockout games. So I don't dismiss entirely the fact that human nature means that a player, when something stable is removed from the equation, that it can affect him. But the fact that this is a Rugby World Cup would have motivated lads that they would have no more chances. They would have built up a lot of points under Joe, the lads he favoured. And I mean, in the end, he did.
But a lot happens subconsciously with the players. You don't need much psychological warfare to turn the dial on the way you're thinking. Now, whether that's thinking trying to get into the team or trying to stay into the team or trying to get into the squad, it's even things that would reflect on Simon Zeebo. His name has come up in the media in the last couple of days a lot of time. You know, you take the psychological draw for someone like him who says, okay, I don't get on particularly well, Joe, he doesn't like my style of rugby, whatever, I'm going over to France or whatever. Suddenly, if it was announced that there was a new coach coming on board, he may be remotivated and say, well, hey, this coach may bring me back in, or it may be a different attitude. So it does affect players' ways of thinking. I don't think it's an excuse for.
I thought what Eddie was saying was interesting in studio earlier, like just about, like as a coach, to strip it down. First of all, you have a philosophy on how the game should be played. Yeah. Then you look at the players that you have at your disposal. Yeah. And then you tailor each game plan according to the individual opponent as they come up the horizon. You know, ABC stuff.
Yeah.
But like, obviously, that's just like, what colour, what's your favourite colour? It's a very personal thing to different coaches. And Joe is a mystery because his Claremont and Leinster pedigree was attacking rugby, and yet we ended up playing stuff that
bored
us.
But you see, that's why I don't necessarily agree with Eddie on that, and I said it, because that is the way that he may operate. Others would operate the other way. They would look at the group of players they have and their skill sets and said, that is the way.
Yes.
You know, when I was coaching New Zealand, all coaches, including like Otago, Canterbury, Auckland, all these top teams at that stage, would say, okay, you know, where's our player base? Okay, they're big, powerful athletes or whatever, or they're a bit like Japan, that you know, we've got to play quick away, and they would assemble the players and say, these are the players we have to work with. Now here's the philosophy, rather than the other way around.
Yes,
Rather than trying to dovetail players in that don't actually buy into your philosophy.
Yeah, and the 2018, like, 2018 was brilliant. It was very exciting. Even I found 20 phase rugby exciting once it's executed well. It's not boring at all to me, but the fact of, if you play that style of rugby for that long, it puts a lot of miles on the body clock. So if we had bigger hardy buck farmers like the South Africans can call on from their reserves, we would probably be able to continue that over a longer period. But just imagine
that's
how tired Stander, O'Mahony, Best, these
quick.
Guys were.
You know,
I just don't think the native Paddy, and I mean, this is nothing to do with it is to do with genes, obviously. It's nothing to do with like where you were born or what's on your passport. But the native Paddy doesn't tend to be as strong as early as, say, a native Pacific Islander.
No, that's true. But I think that you start to bring them through. Like, there's plenty of young loose forwards I've seen, you know, that could really make the step up pretty quickly. I think Jack Conan actually was more of a loss than people think, because it didn't really give Joe an option to shuffle the back row around much. When Levy was out, it didn't give Joe the option to you know. Let's talk about what's coming up the line further. You've a lot of forwards there like Tyke Byrne and these guys that will be the future. Levy will come back, hopefully. You'll have that young Penny or whatever in the under-21s, these players, Max Deegan, Kieran Dyrus. There's a lot of players around there that could fit into that mould of how you want to play the game. And so it's a new broom sweeps clean-ish, because, you know, Farrell will come in, but Mike Catt will come in as attack coach.
Michael's point, I mean, why aren't they playing? Bar Max Deegan, who's not in the Irish setup at the moment, even though his father Aidan was a Mashenfeller member, he used to run legs. But both of them are injured. Yeah. I mean, that's the issue too. I mean, we're going to have to wait a few years, and I'm not one of these, rugby, blah, 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 but you're going to have to wait a few years to see that forcing men whose natural body shape isn't perhaps designed for constant collision into that, not forcing, they do it by willing it, well paid for it, may have implications. We may be dealing with people who are not fully fit, fully 100%
fit. That's
what
I was saying before.
Permanently.
Then if that's the case, then decide fairly early what sort of style of rugby you want to play and what suits the Irish psyche the best, a bit like what Japan have done. So you start looking and saying, okay, we're not going to produce those giants in the game, but what we can produce is, I know Japanese domestic rugby spend hours on skill training. You know, and it reflected in this World Cup. You know, it wasn't about physicality.
Every pass,
it was
stuck, every offload.
Every pass, every offload. They're a team that wanted to offload. That's their first option to do. But that'll bring, it'll be a new philosophy. You know, Farrell will have a new philosophy. Cap will have a new philosophy. And he does have the players to work with. So it's not doom and gloom in that sense.
No, not at all.
It's just disappointing in the manner of the loss.
It is disappointing.
And it hurts.
Yeah, and especially when you see England going so well and like they had their dip at just the right time. Remember, they Grand Slam champions. We took them down here in 2017.
Yeah.
In that game to stop them winning back-to-back slams.
Yes, slam busting.
And then they went off and lost to everybody. Namibia, not really, but you know what I mean.
That happened in New Zealand. Yeah. 1987, I was involved in that World Cup. If you'd said to me, I didn't worry about it so much at that time because of the pull-out injury, because I said, they're going to win it next time. You know, what was it, another 16 years before they won it? You know.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, 16 years before. And I just thought, look, it'll be another 4 years that they'll win it. It's just, I think, you know, being over here so long myself, you know, 30 years, and yourself being around sort of media in the game for so long, you know, it would have been nice, wouldn't it?
It would have been
to get to a final even and to have that.
It would, but we'll end on a positive because, I mean, if you look at the Joe Schmidt, the highlights, I mean, you've got so many, Brent, I'm sure you've, but sporting occasions in general. I mean, I look back at, like, some of these I was just as a punter rather than working.
Yeah.
But, like, beating the All Blacks 2018, absolutely up there. The 2013 match against the All Blacks was up there too, even though we lost it. The noise, it was just wonderful.
Chicago and,
it was in the middle of a recession and we were all pissed off and here we went. You know, and then before that, like,
well, Raj against Wales and the Grand Slam.
And then Declan and Eddie's era, the Crow. Croke Park win against England.
Oh, England.
But Joe gave us some, like,
oh, absolutely, some great days.
Munster and Biarritz in Wales in 2006. Oh, yeah. Like, he's provided us with more than his
absolutely.
Fair share.
Firstly, with Leinster, obviously, and the
order
Cup
of the moment, Joe Schmidt, because we don't have an honour system here. We're a republic, proper order, unlike you members of
absolutely.
Commonwealth or
absolutely.
Whatever you are.
He's done a fantastic job, and that's what he should be remembered. That should be his legacy, to bring into Ireland to a place where they were ranked number one in the world, that they won a Grand Slam for the first time in years, heaps of trophies and championships, and then, unfortunately for him, you know, a semi-final would have been,
There was the away win, first away win in South Africa, first series win in Australia in years.
New Zealand.
I know, that was absolutely fantastic. Yeah. The problem with, it's one of these things, once you raise standards, which he did immensely, you are expected to meet them. And if you don't get close, there's a problem.
Stay mediocre
there.
In life and you'll be fine. That's the message coming from us. All right, we leave it there. Gosh, there's another four games. I was going to say, there is four games, two semis, the final, and then the one everyone loves, the bronze medal match,
live on RTE. Who wants to play on that match?
Television
who knows?
Radio.
That'd be a good
Wales,
quiz.
Wales.
I know, but who were they? Third last World Cup.
Well, they will be this time, won't they?
No, but who was third in the last World Cup?
Oh, that's a good point. Somebody, Argentina beaten by South Africa.
Oh,
isn't that right?
I used to feel so sorry for teams playing in that game. Why did they?
It's like a boxing. You know, in boxing, that? In boxing, they just give the two semi-final losing semi-finalists the bronze medal. So maybe
Huey Russell.
Just give them the two medals, because it's. I mean, I'm saying our clubs would be happy with that, because you get injured in the bronze.
I don't know why the logistics match. Of that is. It because they've got to hang around?
I think it's an amateur hangover.
And making the money sign with my fingers.
The sheets, the paper. Okay, we'll leave you there. Thanks indeed to Brent, and thanks to Michael, and thanks to Gary Moran for helping us out here in Studio D, Radio Centre.